It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, a Politics Wednesday edition of our program. Today joining us, Stefan Schmidt is a university professor of political science at Iowa State University. He's joined us many times. He's in our Ames studio. Hello, Stefan.
Hello, my pleasure.
Jeff Taylor with us, joining us by phone from Northwest Iowa. He is a professor and a chair in the Department of Political Science at Dort College. That's in Sioux Center, a private Christian liberal arts college. Jeff, wonderful to have you on again.
Glad to be here, Ben. Thank you.
Later in the hour, Jeff, to give you a heads up on about this, I was looking at some poll numbers about the degree to which Catholics back Hillary Clinton by a large majority, but evangelical Christians are backing Trump by a large majority. I would like to get both of your views on why that may be a little bit later in the hour. But first of all, we want to talk about last night's debate between Tim Kaine and Mike Pence squaring off in the only vice presidential debate of this election. What did you see? What did you hear in this discussion last night? An active discussion going on our Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page, where we're challenging you to go to our Facebook page and in six words or less, tell us what you saw or heard in last night's debate. Six words or less, what you saw or heard in last night's debate. We have several people already. Russ Richardson always interrupting each other. Those are his four words, interruption and deflection, from David on our Facebook page. Well, indeed, that was part of the picture last night. Here's a snippet from the debate highlighting the challenge CBS News moderator Elaine Quijano had when trying to get Mike Pence and Tim Kaine to answer questions individually.
Returns when
they're
he was under audit.
Raise your taxes.
Gentlemen,
we're
if you
cut
can't
your
meet
taxes.
The Nixon standard, the people at home cannot understand either one of you when you speak over each other.
Okay, Chelsea on our Facebook page echoing that she described in her six words, two dads arguing at a soccer game. Not a bad image there, Chelsea. Thanks for that. Well, let's get the images from Stefan Schmidt and Jeff Taylor. Stefan, was there a winner in the debate last night?
You know, it really doesn't matter, but, you know, probably Pence won because the media says he won. You know, I mean, that's how this goes, right? The media says he won because he was very moderated and very in control, and Kaine kept interrupting him, and so he won. So I say he won.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now you're going to join.
I'm going to join.
You're not
going to
buck the trend. You're going to join the majority.
Yes,
of,
I am.
Of the media. Jeff, what do you say? Do you stick with that opinion?
I would concur with that, and that was my thought even before I heard what the media analysis was, just because even though I thought Kaine did what he needed to do when it came to shoring up his base, I thought Pence did that as well, but maybe did it with a little less, I don't know, what you'd say, zeal or kind of over-caffeinated style that I think was off-putting by Kaine. So mm-hmm. I tend to think Pence had the edge, too.
Mm-hmm. We had that word caffeinated used. I saw that in some other analysis, and it seemed like Kaine was really chomping at the bit, and it is a tricky thing to interrupt appropriately. What about this? In style versus substance, here's some analysis that I heard. One analysis said simply Pence won on style while Kaine won on substance. So, Stefan, can you buy that?
Maybe, but I come back to the comment I was making earlier briefly, which is that it doesn't really make any difference because probably no one is going to change their view as a result of this. And therefore, it's just like a TV show. I don't think that a lot of undecided voters probably watched this. I think that Hillary Clinton supporters clearly think that Kaine won and that, you know, Pence and Trump are unacceptable. And the same is true on the other side. So we're frozen in place. And it's not even clear that the presidential level debates are shaking out a lot. I mean, there may be a slight bump from the last debate. But vice presidential debates are fairly new, and you can lose a vice presidential debate, and your ticket can still end up in the White House. So, you know, it's do we want to analyze rhetoric and style and so on, which is interesting and fine. But in the end, you know, does it make a big difference? And I think it probably doesn't.
Right, and to that point, talk to Lloyd Benson about that, right?
Yes, exactly.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about what Mike Pence did differently than Donald Trump during last night's debate. For instance, Mike Pence brought up criticism that Donald Trump did not during the presidential debate. Condemnation of Clinton's use of the Clinton Foundation while she was Secretary of State.
foreign donors and certainly foreign governments cannot participate in the American political process. They cannot make financial contributions. But the Clintons figured out a way to create a foundation where foreign governments and foreign donors could donate millions of dollars. And then we found, thanks to the good work of the Associated Press, that more than half of her private meetings when she was Secretary of State were given to major donors of the Clinton Foundation. When you talk about that, all these baseless rumors about Russia and the rest, Hillary Clinton, you asked the trustworthy question at the very beginning. The reason
Governor,
the American people don't trust
up.
Hillary Clinton is because they are looking at the pay-to-play politics that she operated with the Clinton Foundation through a
Governor,
private
please.
Server while she's
Your
Secretary
two minutes
of State.
Are up, Governor.
Okay, Mike Pence there striking out where Donald Trump did it not in his first presidential debate. Jeff Taylor, I don't know about the veracity of what was said, but he went to tread on an area that Donald Trump didn't, and perhaps a vulnerability of Clinton.
Right. He emphasized some of her weaknesses in a way that Trump did not capitalize on at all, or at least not as much as his supporters wanted. So the Clinton Foundation, the 33,000 emails, those kinds of things, he hammered hard on those. And then I think also Pence was more successful in what he didn't say. He didn't get into protracted explanations about every allegation that the Democrat was making. Instead, he engaged in what they call a pivot, where he kind of dismisses the accusation out of hand, and then he turns to something that he really wants to talk about. And Trump tended to get mired in the minutia of the accusations.
Well, what do you think about that as a tactic? A handful of Trump remarks that Pence was asked to defend by Kane, that Kane launched his way. Instead of defending them, Stefan, he simply claimed that Trump never said it, when, in fact, we can say that he said it. For instance, Donald Trump starting his campaign in 2014 saying, if I run for president, I will absolutely release my taxes. He's broken his first promise, as Kane pointed out, in a number of ways. So we did not hear really Pence defend a lot of the things that that Kane was targeting at Trump and Pence.
Well, this is now a period in American politics where the truth doesn't matter. I mean, if you lie and you say, I'm the greatest, I am the richest, I'm going to do this, you can say, I'm going to do this in the first 5 minutes of a debate and say the opposite in the next 10 minutes, and there are no consequences. What are you going to do? You can't fine them. You can't jail them for lying. And the voters don't seem to care. If you throw out enough lies out there, the voters can't keep track of it. And the number of Pinocchios that you can put on a fact-checking become so numerous that, you know, the Des Moines Register tried to do some fact-checking. They would have to publish their entire newspaper with Pinocchios, right?
Okay.
So we're in a time when the truth has taken a back seat, which is, I think, terrible, because, you know, it means that you can fantasize and make up big lies, and apparently the most voters can't tell the difference, which is, I think, quite tragic.
Mm-hmm. Join our Facebook conversation as we have our radio conversation with Stefan Schmidt of Iowa State University, Jeff Taylor of Dort College. We're asking you in six words or less to tell us what you saw or heard in last night's debate. Jordan on our Facebook page says Pence can't defend Trump's indefensible words. Caitlin says the fall of the Roman Empire. That's a nice one. Thank you, Caitlin. Michael says Kane debated for 2016, Pence for 2020. What about that, Jeff, that Pence's stock has risen for a standard bearer in 2020?
Well, I think that's true. Although partly it depends on who wins the election in November, right? So if Trump wins, Pence may have to wait his turn. But I think he helped himself out personally. Yes, this was really the first big exposure to at least a relatively sizable national audience. But it also, because he came off looking pretty good, at least stylistically, I think it is going to help Trump, especially with the conservative Christian base that has been wary of Trump since the primaries.
Mm-hmm. And Stefan, watching last night, we were able to easily imagine what if we had, or the GOP had, a more conventional Republican candidate nominee in that position. What would the race look like if a Mike Pence was facing Hillary Clinton?
Well, you know, that's interesting, and some people have also said, would if we had a more conventional Democratic candidate who isn't, you know, in the middle of enormous scandals, and so a ticket consisting of Pence and somebody and Kaine and somebody as his running mate would be a normal ticket and would be much less interesting, and the ratings would be very low. But it would be a more normal ticket because, you know, Donald Trump certainly is, you know, from, you know, way out in some field. But Hillary Clinton, you know, is a highly flawed candidate, extremely high rates of mistrust and so on with drip, drip, drip scandals that keep following her. So in both cases, I've had people say to me, I wish each of these was the actual candidate of their party, which is very discouraging for the ones at the top of the ticket, I would guess.
Jeff, tell us more about Tim Kaine's performance. What in your eyes did he need to do last night, and to what degree did he accomplish it?
And you're talking about Senator Kaine, right?
Yes.
You know, I think he didn't need to be aggressive, and I think he succeeded in doing that. I think he went after Trump on a lot of vulnerabilities. Echoed many of the same, accusations and drawing of attention to various statements that Trump has made that have been controversial, just as Secretary Clinton had done in her debate. And so I think in that way he I wouldn't say, although I think Pence had a stronger performance, I wouldn't say that Kaine blew the debate, because I think he probably energized a lot of the Democratic base with a lot of what he said.
Well, let's listen to a little bit of Senator Kaine last night attacking Trump for not having a plan to defeat ISIS. Kaine said, while Trump has no plan, he does have dangerous ideas.
But he does have dangerous ideas. Here's four. He trash talks the military. The military is a disaster. John McCain's no hero. The generals need all to be fired, and I know more than them. He wants to tear up alliances. NATO is obsolete and will only work together with Israel if they pay big league. Third, he loves dictators. He's got kind of a personal Mount Rushmore. Vladimir Putin, Kim Jong-un, Muammar Gaddafi, and Saddam Hussein. Last and most dangerously, Donald Trump believes that the world will be safer if more nations have nuclear weapons. He said Saudi Arabia should get them, Japan should get them, Korea should get them.
Okay, there you have it, a personal Mount Rushmore of dictators, Stephen Schmidt. How about that as an image?
Wow, that is quite a frightening image, I must say. I think the word hyperbole comes into play here. We truly are on the edge of just the most extreme claims about each of the candidates. You know that one of the big supporters of Donald Trump wants Hillary Clinton tried, convicted, and then executed, right? I mean, publicly executed. Where are we in 2016? I mean, this is some sort of year when there's something in the water, I think.
But Stephen, to follow up a little bit on this, hyperbole with the personal Mount Rushmore of dictators, but we did see quite a bit of daylight in Pence talking about Vladimir Putin and what Donald Trump has said about him last night. What is the daylight you saw? Because Pence was very much condemning Putin as a dictator, where we have heard quite different words of admiration from Donald Trump.
It's good cop, bad cop, right? I mean, the voters are supporting the Republican ticket because of Donald Trump, not because of Pence, right? Because Pence came on late. Donald Trump has the huge rallies. Donald Trump has, you know, tied with Hillary Clinton. It's not Mike Pence who has tied with Hillary Clinton in all these different states, and everybody is shocked, and Hillary Clinton is saying, why am I not, 50 points ahead of Trump? So, I think, Pence maybe was playing towards the few undecided voters, because there's only about 5% of all the voters are undecided, and many of them may not vote. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what he was doing, frankly.
Okay, Stephen Schmidt, stay with us in our Ames studio, University Professor of Political Science at Iowa State University. Jeff Taylor of Dort College, where he is chair of the Political Science Department there in Sioux Center. We'd like to have you join us in six words or less. Tell us what you heard in last night's debate, having fun with that. Also, getting to some of the truth of the matter in many people's eyes about the interruption. distractions and deflection and so forth. Join us when we return in just a few minutes. Go to Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page. Six words or less, tell us what you heard in last night's debate. It's Midstream in River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer over this Wednesday noon hour. Of course, Politics Wednesday today. Stefan Schmidt, University Professor of Political Science at Iowa State University. Good enough to come to our Ames studio. Jeff Taylor on the phone, Professor and Chair in the Department of Political Science at Dort College in Sioux Center. And we're picking apart last night's debate. Interesting. Perhaps you went through the entire 90 minutes. Perhaps you didn't. Jeff, on our Facebook page, when asked for his six words or less to tell us what he saw or heard in last night's debate, said, too long, did not watch. Grant Olson, both interrupting, turned it off 10 minutes in. Matt Krantz, my kids playing, TV was off. Matt, thank you for your six words. Let me ask this. Stefan, you have such a great history of presidential politics going back decades. How does this debate, vice presidential debate, compare with other VP debates that come to mind from recent memory?
I think that it was a little nastier. There was more interruption for sure. But, you know, very often there are at least moments like this. And the one thing I thought was different was that debaters no longer pay any attention to the moderators. I mean, Elaine Quijano had no control over this debate. She's been criticized for not, you know, keeping the thing on track and so on. But frankly, and I talked to some people this morning, and they said, I don't really care about the moderator. I want to hear the candidates talking about issues. And, you know, the moderator should be there to keep the flow going. But it used to be that the moderators could make a more disciplined evening out of it. And I do think that the length of it is probably a little bit too much. And when you think about it, the national networks have all cut down their new evening news programs to half an hour. It used to be 60 minutes. Now it's 30. And part of that 30 is entertainment, where you have, you know, little panda bears falling off platforms in China. And so to expect people to actually sit and watch a debate like this for the whole length of it pretty much focuses it on junkies like us, you know, political junkies, you know, who live
torture
by this.
Ourselves.
Well, that's right.
It.
People who, you know, who actually enjoy seeing this and want to pick it apart. But the average individual is probably not all that interested. Mm-hmm. And I think it used to be, I think the debates were shorter and more disciplined.
Okay, well, let's listen to a little excerpt from last night. Again, this is going to an area where the first presidential debate did not, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, when asked how each campaign would handle the issue of law enforcement and race relations, mm-hmm. The VP candidates differed on where to begin the conversation. Here's Mike Pence, and then we'll hear Tim Kaine jump in.
We ought to stop seizing on these moments of tragedy. We ought to assure the public that we'll have a full and complete and transparent investigation whenever there's a loss of life because of police action. But, Senator, please, you know, enough of this seeking every opportunity to demean law enforcement broadly by making
Elaine,
the accusation of implicit bias every time tragedy occurs.
Elaine, people shouldn't be afraid to bring up issues of bias in law enforcement. And if you're afraid to have if you're afraid to have the discussion, you'll never solve it.
Tim Kaine there with Mike Pence last night's vice presidential debate. Chris joining us from Des Moines. He dialed 1-866-780-9100. Chris, I see on my screen that you wanted to talk about the fact that this was there, and you wanted to see more talk about the racial tension in our country.
Oh yes, because it's a serious issue with Mr. Trump. When he says he just wants law and order, first of all, what does he mean by that? Because when he says it, he's talking as if he wants to go back to 1910, 1920. That's how it comes off when he's saying it. First of all, when it comes to the police officers, yes, you know, we want to say that there are bad officers out here, and so when you have bad officers, you have to get them bad officers off the force. You can't continue to let these bad officers stay on the force. But then we also want to say that there's also good officers. Okay, but tell me this. Are they good officers that know about the bad officers that don't say anything because of the code assignments?
Okay, there's a question, perhaps for another hour as we talk about police, but a great, great comment, observation, Chris, from Des Moines. Chime in here, Jeff Taylor there at Dort College. Race relations, police in our society, such a huge issue over the last couple of years and a major issue in this campaign.
Yeah, you know, I think, I mean, Chris does make some good points there, and I think we do need a more honest discussion and a more open discussion about this, because I think it's very important, and yet it has tended to be neglected, which is why Black Lives Matter as a movement, even if it's not all centrally controlled, if it's very local manifestations of that, I think it's very important, and it's produced a backlash on the one hand, but a lot of people feel like, well, at last we're finally dealing with this. And you know, the only thing I'd say that I would add to that is that sometimes I think with the cultural emphasis by some on political correctness, one of the downsides of that emphasis is that it's made people more hesitant to talk about race, because if you say the wrong thing or you phrase it the wrong way, people are very quick to come out with the accusation of racist and condemn that. So it's in some ways, I think it's put a little bit of a damper on people's willingness to talk more openly. But sweeping it under the rug is probably the worst thing of all.
Okay. Jeff Taylor with us from Dort College in Sioux Center. Stefan Schmidt and Jeff, let's talk a little bit about the religious intersection where the religious intersection of these vice presidential candidates. Both of them have strong Christian backgrounds, both grew up Catholic. Cain, in fact, is a Jesuit educated. He did missionary work, I believe, in Latin America for the Jesuits. Mike Pence became a Christian evangelical in his late teens. This is interesting, though. Listen to this. I want your reaction, because polls show Trump losing to Hillary Clinton among American Catholics by 20%, even 30%. At the same time, polls show Trump winning among Christian evangelicals. Pew Research. Nearly 80% of white evangelical voters saying they would vote for Trump, including about a third who strongly back his campaign. Now Catholics polled in their support for Trump, they are against Trump by a huge margin. How do you account for this? Jeff Taylor, there, you're at a Christian, private Christian liberal arts college in Sioux Center. Do you see that on campus? How do you account for the difference between these two Christian groups?
You know, I do, and I think broadly speaking, you describe my college, Dort College, as evangelical, although it's coming really more out of the Calvinist tradition. We would call it more reformational.
I took that, just to be clear, I took that right off your website.
Yes, well, and I agree. I mean, it fits our students, generally speaking, and our students tend to be Republican. But I would say that I think Pence helped Trump the most in the debate last night with those two-thirds of evangelicals who may be leaning toward Trump or saying they're planning to vote for him, but without much enthusiasm. I thought Pence, in that answer about abortion and kind of talking about his personal Christian testimony, it was a way, I mean, he looked directly at the camera in an effective way, and I thought he was speaking to those two-thirds of evangelicals for whom Trump was never their first choice. They wanted a Cruz or a Santorum or a Ben Carson, and instead they ended with a Trump. And there's a lot of doubts and concerns about him of how genuine he is in terms of his faith or his commitment on social issues.
Mm-hmm. Stefan Schmidt, how do you account for the massive divide, according to polling, between Catholics and evangelicals in their support for Trump?
I agree with Jeff, I mean, on some of the things that he said. One of the reasons that it turned out this way is because Catholics have been voting more for Democrats, and so it's a party affiliation, party ideology.
Why? What is going on perhaps at Catholic churches and catechism classes and those kinds of things, Catholic gatherings, that's going so differently than what's happening in evangelical groups?
I think Catholics often focus on parts of the liturgy that talk about loving your brother and sister and social responsibility and things like that. And the Republican Party has not been very strong on those issues. I think the Catholics are not as conservative, frankly, And if you look at the current Pope, that explains it, doesn't it? I mean, Donald Trump went after the Pope, for God's sake.
Jeff, jump in there. I hear
yeah,
you.
No, I
responding.
Agree. That's a very good point. There's been so much excitement during this season last year that we may have forgotten that dust-up he had with Pope Francis. But I think that's part of it, and I agree exactly with what Stefan is saying, that the Catholic tradition, there is an emphasis on the social dimension, the community obligations, in a way that the Protestant evangelicals often do not have. They will often not emphasize that as much, and so I think it's in some ways you're going to tend to be more politically liberal with that social justice emphasis.
Mm-hmm. How did Jeff? How did you feel the moderator did? CBS anchor and debate moderator Elaine Quijano. How did she perform last night? You think?
Well, I thought she was a weak moderator. I'm kind of two minds with that. I feel like on the one hand, it isn't about the journalists. It's not about the superstar, TV celebrities that are going to, fact check on the fly and set everybody straight. And we really tune in to see the candidates. But then on the other hand, if you're going to have a moderator, I felt like she was, going through the motions, but she was just reading questions, and then it was just a free-for-all. And she usually would not have any follow-up, so she wouldn't hold either candidate accountable for ducking the questions, which both of them ducked consistently.
Stephanie, one of our listeners in Cedar Rapids, emailed to ask, why don't the moderators employ timed microphones in the debate? This would eliminate all of that annoying interrupting and long-run soliloquies. Well, probably, Stephanie, my guess is the candidates would never agree to having their mics cut.
Yeah,
but that's an interesting idea, right?
Well, no, exactly, and I think that you're exactly right. I mean, the point is that these things are highly contractual. Where is this going to take place? What is the setting? How high is my chair going to be? Are the mics going to be open all the time? Is there going to be a little device that shows a yellow light when I have 1 minute left and a red light when I'm done, and then my mic goes dead? And the answer is no. So these are highly negotiated events. And frankly, this, I come from an older tradition, right? I'm old school. This was not really a debate. In a debate, you have very strict rules. You have, so many seconds to rebut and so many different opening and closing statement and all that. And there is discipline. This was more like a round table. And so when we call them debates, I think very often we are using the wrong term.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to get into a couple of voices from surrogates for our candidates before we end this hour. Staying with the theme of the media, in an interview with Fox News, Sean Hannity last week, former House Speaker and Trump surrogate Newt Gingrich, with on with Sean Hannity, he criticized the media for being biased towards Hillary Clinton, particularly with the former Miss Universe, Alicia Machado, the story which Clinton brought up during last week's presidential debate. Let's listen.
If you did not have the elite media propping her up, protecting her, smearing Donald Trump, distorting the campaign, she'd be gone. I mean, if Lester Holt hadn't sided with her, you had the Holt-Clinton versus Trump debate, in which Holt and Clinton were on the same team, basically. If those things weren't going on, she'd be gone. We now know, and I give the Washington Post some credit for this, they laid out today all of the different pieces that have been put in place by the Clinton campaign, a Cosmopolitan story, a New York Times story, video already done, a Guardian interview. All of this was done before the debate. Mm-hmm. Setting up
Michelle. So there was Sean Hannity talking with Newt Gingrich. I wonder, Jeff Taylor, if the fact that the Democrats were deaf to, and it seems Hillary Clinton baited Donald Trump and had all her campaign's follow through ready to go, does that mean that the media's in with Hillary Clinton's campaign?
No, not that by itself doesn't mean that. It just means that she was probably better prepared, and she's been a politician much longer, and so she's more adept at both answering questions and deflecting questions and also dishing it out. So, no, I don't think that part is an indication. I do think there is. Studies over the decades have shown this, that people in the media especially you know, at the editorial and reportorial level, they do tend to be more Democrats than Republicans, and they do tend to be on most issues more liberal than conservative. And I think this year, you know, we're seeing even traditional Republican newspapers and media outlets, including Fox News, oftentimes either hostile to Trump or somewhat divided in their support for Trump. So I do think it's fair to say that the mainstream media is generally supporting Clinton more than Trump, and I think the moderator in that debate posed much tougher questions to Trump.
Right, but let me put it to you yeah. this way, Jeff, because it's in a way, one of the thoughts by many people here is that Trump comes out, and we talked about this early in the hour, with so many controversial remarks, any one or two of which would have downed a Mitt Romney or a John McCain or any other Republican candidate in previous years. But now we have them almost on a daily or weekly basis, that the media gets criticized simply for reporting what Donald Trump says.
You know, and I agree with that, but again, only up to a point, because sometimes what can, even reporting somebody's actual words, if you don't put them into context, that's not then the whole truth, right? It might be the truth, but not the whole truth. So I think sometimes it's selective quotation, and I'd say in terms of Clinton, part of it is that she benefits from having a lot of her scandals and controversies taking place back in the 1990s. And as a result of that, we're not talking about Travelgate and Cattlegate and all of the various shenanigans that she was either involved in or accused of, because the media
accused of is a key word. Never indicted for, never punished for, because she was never found to be guilty, right?
That's true. But something like, you know, getting $100,000 on cattle commodities, whether that was inside trading or not. It's probably relevant, but it's dismissed as old news because the media has already covered that. But people in 2016, how many people actually remember any of that, right? So it's Trump is the new person, and so I think he's getting more scrutiny. But in some ways, probably the media needs to balance it out a little bit by looking at the whole scope of her career.
Okay, Stephen Schmidt, you jump in here with a long.
Here's what I would say to Newt. I would say, Newt, the reason you have Donald Trump as the candidate of your party is because MSNBC and Morning Joe gave Donald Trump a platform every single day throughout the caucus and primary season. He could call up MSNBC any day, and they would talk to him. They defended him. They said, well, the voters like him. They were in his pocket until just very recently. I would say all of the conservative talk media, except a couple that you can mention, were saying, fine, Donald Trump is great, defending him, giving him all the airtime. You think if you listen to Rush Limbaugh that you ever hear anything nice about Hillary Clinton? No, you never do. Fox may have had a few people who pushed back against Trump, but by and large, I mean, he's hired the guy who resigned from Fox, right, as his media advisor. And so I think there was plenty of excellent media, and there still is, for Donald Trump. I watch, you know, everything, and when I watch Fox News in the mornings, they're on board with Donald Trump completely. And to say that Hillary Clinton hasn't gotten a lot of media blows, that's baloney. I mean, I've seen the hearings, 11 hours I think it was in Congress. I've seen them go after every single story that has to do with another leak of her emails. I've seen them reporting about the Clinton Foundation. You know, I think this is the myth again, you know, that, well, the media is unfair and my microphone wasn't working and the questions that were asked were unfair. If Donald Trump had won the debate against Hillary Clinton and all of us had said, wow, that was fabulous, do you think that any of the people, including Newt Gingrich, would have said the media is biased and, you know, they asked questions that were harder? If Trump had won, they would have said it was a great debate. So, you know, when you're not doing well and you have a lot of stories about you like, you know, not meeting the requirements of New York State for your foundation and having violated the laws of New York State in terms of giving to your foundation. That's not media bias. That's just a news story.
Okay, let's finish up. We have a couple minutes left before we have to end this hour. Analysis in the news media that Trump would do well to study Pence's approach last night to improve his performance when we look towards Sunday, the second presidential debate between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. What lessons can Trump take from Mike Pence, Jeff Taylor?
Well, I would say he was effective in, as I said, turning questions and accusations around. So if you get mired in responding to every specific criticism and charge that's being leveled at you, then you're constantly on the defense. And you're really then battling on the opponent's side of the field. And so I guess if I were advising Trump, I'd say have quick, preferably honest, but at least quick responses to each accusation, mm-hmm. and then move on. Don't try to go into detail about them.
Right. But unlike Pence, Trump can't very well, or perhaps he can. He has, right? Stephen disowned his own words when confronted with some of the remarks he's made in the past.
Well, that's true. And I think my advice would be, you know, talk about the economy. Talk about how you would beef up the American military. Talk about exactly how you would create so many millions of jobs. What would you do? And try to stay on script. You know, don't suddenly get a brilliant idea and go off script and start improvising, because probably you're going to end up, making the headlines in a way that you don't want to.
You're telling Trump not to trust his instincts.
I'm telling Trump not to trust his instincts in these debates. I mean, he's done terrifically well, and the advice to him all through the caucus and primary season was, well, you're never going to make it because you insulted Mexicans, because you were going to ban Muslims, and yet every time he did that, his poll numbers went up. So it's very hard to convince him that he's not doing the right thing. But on the other hand, you have women and minority voters, Latinos, African-American and other voters, and younger voters who you can't lose too big a chunk of that particular piece of the American electorate if you want to win. And don't offend them.
Okay, Stephen Schmidt, thank you for coming into our studio today. University professor of political science at Iowa State University. And Jeff Taylor, professor and chair in the Department of Political Science at Dort College in Sioux Center. Jeff and Stephen, wonderful. Thank you for the hour of your insights, picking apart the latest debate.
Thank you. And I gave my money right here in the studio to the people sitting in the next studio. So I contributed during this hour, and everybody else should as well.
Okay. Thanks for that shout out. Thanks, Jeff, too.
Ben.